allowing us to start. So I think we are okay. Thank you very much. In the presentation today, we have got an agenda, which is there. All of us, let's try and check at the agenda. In terms of introduction, apology, presentation by the DPP on its strategic plan and APP discussion, and closing remarks. The issue of the minutes, honourable members, we put it as second line, so that when the department finishes, we can remain dealing with the issue of the minutes and then agenda. So that is the agenda that we have. Let me take this opportunity to welcome honourable members, the department led by the minister and the deputy minister, together with the management, the honourable members, our staff and management from the committee side. You are all welcomed. First item there is introduction. I'll start with the staff. My name is Matibe Chitarege Berwin. I'm the chairperson of this committee. And then I'll go to honorable members to do the self-introduction, starting with honorable Nanabe.
Thank you, chairperson. My name is Mulindi Nana. I'm a member of this committee and I'm from the Eastern Cape.
Thanks, Chair. My name is Lindwe B.B. Mangumalo. I'm from Cape Town. I'm the group of this committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Samalam Nguyeni Wagangwenya, member of this committee from Gauteng.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. In Labekin Kakakankuni, Chitwa Northern Cape Province.
Thanks, Chair. Chomonyambi from Bumala.
Chair Arnold Montkutje from the Free State and member of this committee.
Thank you very much. Then we can move to the Honourable Minister and the delegation.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, Honourable Members. I'm Praveen Gordon, Minister of Public Enterprises, and with me is the Deputy Minister, Mr. Maswale, and let me also introduce you to, next to him on the right-hand side is Mr. Tlakudi, who is the Helen Bongi for the...
That phone just reminded us that we need to deal with our phones.
Yes.
So that they don't
distract us. Yeah. So Mr. Tlakudi is acting DG, yesterday, of the department. We have advertised for the position of the DG, and once we're ready, we'll let you know. But I'll ask him to introduce his team.
Thank you very much, Chair. The next to me is Makgola Makololo. She is the DDG for ESCOM. And to the right of her is Avril Halstead, who is the DDG for Transport. And then we have DDG Makobe, who is responsible for Legal Governance and Risk. And on Makobe's right is Jackie Mudisa, who is the DDG for Financial Assurance in the department. And we also have our CFO with us here, Benedicta Mahalati. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Good morning to everyone. My name is Loli Sibisi. I am the committee secretary. Thank you.
Morning, everyone. My name is Eric Boscati. I am the Cornell advisor for the committee.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Bolanus Melani, researcher for the committee.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Amanda Zindlani, the committee assistant.
Good morning. My name is Yolisa Landru, Parliamentary Communication Service.
No, thank you. Oh, there is one left there. I saw someone getting the mic.
No, go on, Lalo's a public interviewer.
That's okay. We've got a number of backup staff here, so they don't have to introduce themselves.
No, thank you. Thank you very much. The second item is apologies. We received an apology from Honorable Ndongeni from the Eastern Cape Week. She is attending another select committee.
And
Honorable Smith also gave us an apology that you join us later. Yes, Honorable Ndongeni.
Thank you, Chair. There is an apology from an EFF member, Honorable Anon. And on the same breath, I would respectfully so, in respect of the constitution of this country, recuse myself from this meeting because I can't be in the same room as with Joshua Doe, the constitutional delinquent. So in those few words, in respect of all members of this committee, yourself, the chairperson, and the constitution, I therefore recuse myself. Thank you.
There is a point of order from Honorable Nene.
Yeah, we'll
have a harmonious meeting called
Goodbye.
No, I wanted to deal with it because there's nothing that is in this meeting. If you want to come, you can come, but you can't come and undermine the meeting.
Yeah.
So if she never wanted to be part of the meeting, there was no need for her to be part
come.
Of it because
yeah.
You never drag her to be part of this meeting.
Thank you very much. We dealt with the apologies. The third item is the presentation by DPE on its strategic plan APP. I'll hand over to the minister.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thanks to the honourable members. DPE is responsible, as I'm sure you've worked out, for essentially seven state-owned companies or entities, the biggest of which is Eskom, which is in the news for various reasons, including the President's announcements about repositioning Eskom, and secondly, rescuing Eskom from some of its financial difficulties, but thirdly, also looking into some of the operational issues that Eskom has been confronted with, particularly on the generation side. There are also, I think, issues in relation to the payment culture at the municipal level and directly to Eskom, which impacts on Eskom as well. So at some stage we've asked the committee to look into these matters, and particularly where illegal connections are taking place and infrastructure, either municipal...
The whip is just advising me on something. We did not adopt the agenda.
Yes,
I don't want the minister to continue when the agenda has not been adopted.
Yeah, thank you so much, Chair.
Yeah.
I move for the adoption of the agenda, Chair.
Okay. Any second match? Honorable Ngwenya? Okay, it's seconded. You can continue, Honorable Minister. Sorry for interjection.
That's fine. It says agenda, so it's adopted. Otherwise, you put forward a draft agenda. So as I was saying, Chair and members, there are challenges at a community level in relation to the illegal connections, non-payment of electricity bills, but more particularly damage to infrastructure. that is currently impacting upon us as well and impacting on Eskom. And of course the big issue is the financial issue of its debt of 420 billion rand. So in making our presentation to you, we'll cover some of that. The second entity is Transnet. And Transnet is a crucial logistics operator in South Africa. Railway facilities or freight facilities that it offers to our mining industry is absolutely crucial, both in terms of getting mineral resources to places where it could be beneficiated or exported, but secondly, getting commercial goods both into and out of ports. Although it's a small part at the moment of Transnet's business, it's a part that needs to increase. And thirdly, the operation of ports, which currently is facing some challenges because there's a go slow at some of our ports that's impacting on various stakeholders in our economy. It also operates various pipelines. As you know, the main one we're familiar with is the Durban-Gauteng one, and that's part of its core business as well. The third is Danel. Danel is and has been since 1992 a crucial player in our defense industry. And the manner in which it operates and has been operating is that it's at the heart, if you like, of a whole lot of firms, both small and bigger firms, that actually supply components and technology to Danel, apart from its own intellectual property. And I'll come back to that point in a moment. But it also has its fair share of financial difficulties at the moment. You would have heard about it running short of liquidity and so on. We have an interesting contradiction at the moment where it has an order book. In other words, it can pull orders to the tune of about 30 billion rands, but it doesn't have enough liquid cash to be able to get the business going. But my colleagues from the department will cover some of that as well. Erexco is a state mining company, but this is an interesting arrangement, as the officials will explain to you, with the Richtersveld community, and arising from a restitution claim, there's a joint venture between Erexco and the community itself. So there's a complex set of arrangements. But Erexco has also been impacted upon by state capture and corruption over the years, and so we intend to take some decisive steps to get it back on its feet shortly. SAFCO is an entity which is reasonably stable, and it deals with forests and with the commercial supply of lumber to milling plants and other people who use that equipment. And then, of course, the two airlines, SAA, which includes Mango, and South African Express. You'll remember that about a year ago, South African Express was grounded. Those of you that come from smaller towns will have suffered as a result. And it's back on its feet. But SAA has also had its fair share of difficulties over many, many years now, and again finds itself in a critical position where we have to make some tough decisions as government about how we manage this asset and how we take it forward. So in respect of each of these, you'll hear what our plans are for the remainder of this financial year. I'll just cover one or two more areas and then hand over to the Director General to go through the details. You have a slide which is slide 5, SOC challenges. And that spells out our experiences over the last year or so and observations in terms of what's been going on at SOEs. By way of introduction, state-owned entities were a crucial part of the state capture project, and we're still trying to calculate how much we would have lost over a 6, 7, 8 year period from from many of these entities. It could be running into hundreds of billions of rands. And what we've done over the last 18 months, which will be continued into the rest of this financial year as well, is tried to, as government, put in place the necessary governance institutions, but also ensure ways as possible to get the operations of these entities right. So if I take you through each of the blocks in the second column, it says what are the external challenges. And they're not entirely external, but governance has clearly been one. So part of the state capture process was to ensure that the inverted commas right type of boards were appointed, so that the boards wouldn't oppose the appointment of the right kind of managers, both of whom actually in virtually all of these entities then facilitated the extraction of funds from these entities. So from about March, April last year, several of the entities have had new boards, so that will be Transnet, Enel, Safcol, SA Express, and in two instances we carried over boards that were appointed in a previous period. November 2017 would have been the SAA board's appointment, and we are reviewing that at the moment. The chair, as you know, has recently resigned. And the Eskom board was appointed in January 2018, but it also has vacancies at the moment, and we're looking at how to reinforce that board with appropriate skills in terms of the kind of challenges it faces over the next few months. So boards and the level of governance that the boards offered or didn't offer, or the extent to which they were complicit in the corruption processes, has been a crucial area of attention. Secondly, it's clearly that the pattern was that the boards ensured that managers in key places were placed in order to ensure that either Trillion was given fees for work that it didn't do, or contracts were given or tenders were awarded in one or other place, and we can go through the details at some stage with you as part of your orientation, in order that money could be actually extracted. And it took various forms. So in Transnet, it took the form of the locomotive deal. Members should indicate how familiar they are with some of those intricacies. If they're not, then we can supply you with information that will give you some idea. So management teams were consolidated in some instances, but in other instances, like both Eskom and Transnet, new CEOs, for example, need to be sought in the near term. The third element of governance is to make sure that the right relationship exists of accountability and transparency between each of these entities and the shareholder department, which is the Department of Public Enterprises. And we're beginning to get that right, but it's not perfect at the moment. And we're working with boards so that in the next 6 months, hopefully, we put in the right measures and oversight mechanisms that are actually necessary. On the financing side, obviously, as a consequence of the past that I talked about, what happens is that the focus of each of these businesses becomes, how do I get money out of the entity, not how do I run the entity well. So the operations of each of these entities becomes neglected, whether it is freight trains running properly or rail lines being maintained in the right kind of way, or power station managers being competent to run power stations and so on. And so once the operations begins to decline, then the finances decline as well. And in some instances, particularly like Eskom, you get a lot of borrowing of money in order to meet the kind of pressure that Medupi and Kusile, as the two new power stations, placed on government. So where costs of those entities are almost triple what they originally were, then you start borrowing. So Eskom 10 years ago had a very small debt, the colleagues will share that with you, and today it has a kind of debt of over 400 billion rand that we actually see. But the third element, as I mentioned earlier on, of financing is the difficulty of having liquidity, the cash to actually operate the business, the cash to actually pay salaries, and often, and this has been going on for virtually a year now, ourselves, the treasury, the entity concerned, have to go to South African banks to borrow money, and sometimes have the money guaranteed by the treasury, but in the hope that the business itself will begin to generate cash so that it can repay some of these loans as well. So liquidity is a big challenge in each of these instances. The so-called internal challenges is, again, the question of corporate governance failure, the challenges in relation to, for example, a simple thing like, or what appears to be a simple role, that of internal audit, which is supposed to give you assurance that different parts of the business are running well and that the right governance measures are in place, often becomes either neglected or undermined, sidelined or corrupted as well. And that means your checks and balances within the institution begin to weaken, and that has its consequences later as we go on. As far as strategy is concerned, I think in essence we're saying, as the President said in three sonas now, but particularly it started with the 2018 sona and reinforced in the 2019 February sona, that many of these businesses, particularly a business like Eskom, can't trade its way out of its trouble. In other words, if you continue to operate in the current way, with the current revenue and with the current cost burden, which is higher than the revenue that you're collecting, you won't be making enough money to pay off the debt or to work your way out of the current difficulties. So in each of these cases where we have that particular problem, we have to find, on the one hand, immediate solutions to the crises that they face, but on the second hand, we have to find, with the boards now, new business models for these entities going into the next 3 to 5 years, so that they become more effective and more efficient at what they actually do. I've talked about the operational areas of the business suffering as a result of some of the phenomena that we've been through over the past period. And overlapping between operations and finance is the question of procurement. So the biggest site of corruption is in fact in the procurement area. So, and this is not unique to South Africa. We've done some global comparisons, so globally as well. So I think that there's a phrase which moves around in international circles: corruption is the name and procurement is the game. So it's through procurement that you begin to extract funds as you go forward. And I've covered the financial side in my remarks as well. So, as we go forward, Chair and members, our job is to stabilize these SOEs at an operational level, governance level, financial level, and where so-called turnarounds or repositioning or rescue is required, to work with the board and the management to ensure that we position these SOEs in a way in which they can survive on their own. And the key, as the government has said, is that we need to reach a position where no SOE can say to government, give me a bailout. In other words, they are self-sustaining from the money that they make themselves. And given the current economic climate on the one hand, and the weaknesses that we had at the revenue service in the recent past as well, which has resulted in a drop in collections, we have a financially constrained government as far as the amount of money is available. Except that in the case of Eskom, for example, government can't ignore some of those challenges and will have to back Eskom and help it to get back on its feet, including repositioning and restructuring some of its components as well, excuse me. So that job is made difficult by both what we call the external fight back, and part of it you saw earlier in the committee as well. So calling people constitutional delinquents is one thing, but becoming defenders of the corrupt, on the other hand, is quite another. And I think the real test that our people want us to pass is whether we are really serious about getting rid of corruption, whether we are really serious about repositioning these SOEs so that they do their job in the economy and secure jobs as much as possible, and thirdly, make them financially viable and do so in a way in which people can see that those who've been guilty of corruption are actually dealt with in terms of the law. And you're going to hear all sorts of narratives about personalities or processes or institutions that is intended to actually mask the process of cleaning up these entities. And so it's important that the honorable members join us in the process of making sure that we create the conditions for this very hard work to be done. The culture in each of the institutions also begins to suffer, because as they say, the fish rots from the head. So if somebody as a CEO is seen to be corrupt, then quite naturally people below the CEO level will say, if he can do it or she can do it, why can't I do it? And so you get subcategories of corruption beginning to emerge, which academics and others have noted it as well. But in the case of Eskom and Transnet, they play a crucial role in our economy and in our lives. And a lot of effort needs to be put into making sure that they are quickly on their feet, particularly Eskom, as possible. And lastly, all that money that has been stolen, it is possible to track down as well. So our law enforcement agencies, together with the SOCs, must actually ask constantly the question, how much disappeared from our books? Where does that money go? Who is it sitting with? And how do we get it back? So that that money, even if it comes 2 years from now or 3 years from now, and these processes are long, but it is within the capability of the financial and judicial systems to actually recover these funds as we go forward as well. So, Chair, let me pause here and ask Mr. Tlakudi to take over and take you through the details. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Honourable Minister. I think before you can go, I think the Minister has given us the context of the presentation. I'll just check with members. How long do we think the DG must take in terms of the presentation? Yeah, because the context is there. Yeah. The minister has given the DG. We can give the timeline. Yeah, Honourable Nyambi.
Chair, I would suggest that even though we don't want to lose the essence of the presentation, the minister has given us the broader overview. So for us to be able to have ample time for a discussion, I think 40. Not unless if there are some important things that might be left out, then we can go beyond that. But 40 can
40 minutes.
Be, yeah. I suggest 40 for the presentation. Mm. Then the rest will
40,
be...
40 is the maximum. You can even go to the minimum. But so that we don't lose the content. Yeah. Thanks, DG.
Thank you very much, Chair. We'll start from slide number 8. So that shows how the programs in the department are set up. Administration, business enhancement, governance, assurance, and performance. And the details are in the APP that we'll share later on. Slide number 9 just gives how each unit in the department is allocated per program. So we can go over that. I'm going to ask the colleagues to speak to their specific APP targets, and of course we have a, if you can be quick, Avril, if you can start on the SOE bill on slide number 10.
And so I'm going to be on slide 10 of the presentation.
The mic? Yeah, the mic. Yeah. So I'm going to start on slide 15 of the presentation. So the minister made reference to the fact that we're going to be looking at putting in place governance institutions, and one of the recommendations that came out of the Presidential Review Committee was that there should be an overarching bill that would, or act that would govern the state-owned enterprises. So this is one of the key initiatives that the department will be working on over the next 3 years. We're planning to follow the standard process that is used for developing legislation by first focusing on developing a green paper during the course of this year, which would then be put out for public comment, and the comments would be used to develop a white paper, and then in 2021-22 that white paper would be translated into a bill which could then be considered by the National Council of Provinces as well as the National Assembly for adoption into law.
Chair, if I may just take over in the interest of time. On slide 10, on human resources, those are the interventions that we have planned for the year. If you go on to slide 11, one of the tasks that we have taken upon is to insource the performance evaluation of SOC boards. The framework is being developed in the current financial year. And one of the areas that we'll be working on as well is just to ensure that the SOC boards and management are complying with the requirements of the MOIs that we have in place governing the functioning of these boards, or the governance in these boards. If you go to number 12, one of the areas that we have worked on is in setting up a fraud line, a hotline for members of the public or people in the SOC that have seen wrongdoing being undertaken. It's been monitored by Makobe's area just to ensure that the issues that are coming up in that hotline are attended to. And of course, what's important going forward in 2.4 is just to have an integrity management framework in place, is to ensure that we're getting the right people into the system to lead our SOCs, and that the risks that arise have been properly attended to. We go to 13, that's governance assurance and performance. This is basically where our financial analysts are sitting in the department, and they assist us, especially slide 13, in terms of analysis of reports that we get from the entities, the corporate plans that come in at the end of February every year, as well as the audit findings, just follow up on the audit findings and ensure that the boards are attending to issues that the external auditors have raised. The slide 14 speaks to business enhancement and industrialization. Their primary is to ensure the socio-economic impact of our SOCs, that as they undertake their operations, as they invest in capital programs, as they undertake industrial activities, that people are being skilled, job opportunities are being created, and that we are creating a supplier base in those sectors in which they operate. CSI self-explanatory in 4.2, we monitor on a quarterly basis what our SOCs are doing. Slide 15 on CSI, we also will be just doing a 5-year view in terms of the impact that these CSI programs have had on the communities which are recipients of the CSI. We have also developed a localization framework, so we implement that through our SOCs, so we continually monitor that. With the Africa Strategy 4.5, what we are doing is try to direct and coordinate our SOCs efforts on the continent in at COSIS. You're all aware there's quite a lot of infrastructure programs that are being undertaken on the continent. Rail and energy obviously are at the forefront. So our SOCs are in a position purely from the skills that we've developed over time to participate in those programs. So we do what we can to help them out then. But also what is an important element there is also for them to harness the private sector in our country when they go for those programs. On 4.6, it has to do with environmental compliance, and of course with ESCOM, it's becoming a major issue, so that we're paying close attention to that. On the ESCOM, these are the sector teams from 16. ESCOM, we ensure that there's shareholder compass, which is basically a performance setting instrument for the SOCs, for all our SOCs. On slide 17, we look at the performance of the fleet to ensure that the lights are kept on. And of course, the major effort currently is to stabilize ESCOM and ensure that it reaches financial sustainability. At EXCO, as Minister has indicated, there is a plan to attend to that going forward, but we also do quarterly monitoring of their performance. Subcall, at the moment, the state has fragmented ownership of forests, with some forests sitting in the forestry, environmental forestry and fisheries department, and some of them are sitting in Subcall. There is an opportunity to consolidate some of those forests. Some of them are in the same areas around the country. So, yeah, if you look at the quality of management of the forestry's department, assets in a much poorer condition than Subcall. So we can utilize some of the capabilities we have in Subcall to help them out. The team, Makhola's team, does regular review of the capital programs on 4.6 to ensure that the build program is going as per schedule. The 5.7, obviously the important requirement is to ensure that we have adequate generation reserve margin, that they also pay attention to that. On slide 19, the same activities in regard to reports are undertaken by Avril's team. The now restructuring is of particular focus in the current financial year to get it back to the numbers that we have seen them being able to achieve in the past. Transnet, the issue of whether we have adequate capacity on our lines is what we're sitting at about there's 235 megatons is what we're aiming for in 2019, but 330 was what was said for the last MTSF period. In slide 20, the with regard to the ports, those are the movements that we check, the crane movements per hour, and with recent the challenges of go slow, we have seen that number dropping quite drastically. So we needed to get to the point where it can ensure that we don't have ships stuck in the ports. They need to be turned around quickly. SAA turnaround is also particular focus there. And of course, there's a decision to consolidate the airlines has been made. Now the issue is what kind of a structure do we need to have in place there. On slide 21, I've spoken about socio-economic impact is what we are interested in. There'll be a particular focus on ESCOM in the current year, and also we task our economic research unit to also produce about 10 substantive and significant reports on an annual basis. Slide 23 to 25 speaks to the funding, how our the allocation that we have received in the current financial as well as over the MTEC period has been allocated, and I'll just stop there, because from slide 26 onwards, it just speaking to the just giving the progress report on the recommendations that we had received from Parliament. So if there's any particular areas you want us to expand on, we are happy to do so. Thank you.
Yes, thank you very much, Acting DG, and thank you very much, Minister. Welcome, Honorable Smith, and Honorable Mudisa. You are welcomed. I didn't have an opportunity to welcome you. I'm welcoming you together with Honorable Smith. Thank you very much. That is the presentation from the department. I'll ask honorable members. The opportunity is ours to engage. Honorable Smith is starting and he has arrived late. He's the first one. He was
means running. You're right. The presentation.
Yeah, he was running too. To make a president, Honorable Smith started. Yeah, Honorable Ngwenya, Honorable Bibi, Honorable Nana, Honorable Nyambi, Honorable Mudisa, and Honorable Groot. Yeah. In that order, Honorable Smith.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. My apology for being late. The special therapist that had extra time with me today. Chair, I want to ask specifically in terms of our strategic public enterprise like Transnet, you know, that's economic, that can drive economic growth. How are we planning to strategically position these state entities in a way that they will contribute towards economic growth that we obviously need very urgently? You know, in line with all the different economic strategies that we have, you know, and potential within the country. When we talk about mining, when we talk about agriculture, industrial, you know, operation, and all of that. Because if I can, and I'm now speaking out of the view of a quite a rural province, which is Limpopo. And more specifically, the municipality where I'm residing, which is Mogalakwena, which has got the richest platinum reef in the world. Okay, it's got the potential for platinum mines. There's coal. There's various other mining opportunities, but also the agricultural potential, the tourist potential, all of that. And then if you look towards Tubatse side, where the mines are also coming up, you know, that's where a lot of potential for growth lies. How do we use, for example, Transnet strategically to link up? Because we're sitting with an issue, and I've raised it in my debate yesterday with Minister Mantashe, you know, on mineral resources and energy, that there's such a strain on our road infrastructure because our rail infrastructure is not in place. And if we go and look at the most successful economies in the world, you know, rail is like the spine of the economy, because to maintain road infrastructure and to compensate for that is so expensive and not sustainable. So, you know,
because I just feel that we've been operating in silos in terms of how we approach them. And we need to start to think strategically. How do we bring this together that it actually starts working for the strategy that we have for our country? To make sure that we realize economic growth. Because the spin-offs of that will obviously be then job creation. Direct job creation and secondary job creation through this infrastructure. And I've raised it in the previous term, but I really feel, you know, we are at the point where it becomes critical where we need to be highly strategical around this. I know we've got a lot of issues, you know, with state entities that are in financial trouble. And, you know, I'm not gonna go on that. I think my colleague will go more in detail on the specifics around that and the proposals from our side, you know, on how to go about. But I want to put that on the table and yeah, if we can engage on that specific point. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning, everyone. Chairperson, first, I would like to welcome the presentation. Also, thank to the minister to be part of this committee, because we've got a challenge of ministers that doesn't come to the committees, especially here at SOP. Hopefully on this sixth parliament we'll do better and work together. My first question, Chairperson, is on the minister in terms of the board. I want to know that how long have this board acting? And if they were acting, how long they've been acting? And how are the department going to solve the problem? And does this post of the board funded? I don't know. I just want you to get a clarity. Secondly, Chairperson, I would like to welcome the department for giving us the document early, because it makes our work easily. I've got a few questions that I've prepared on time because we've got the document early. So we thank you, department, for doing that, because since I've started to attend committees, I've just met the document in front of me when I enter in the meeting. But on this department is different. I've got a document before I sleep, then I go through it. Hence, I did have this time to prepare the questions that I'm going to ask right now. The briefing on its APP and the budget. Furthermore, I would like to pose the following question. The time frame of the introduction of the shareholders management bill in 2020-21, as reflected in your presentation, is noted, desirable. I want to assure with the sentiment of the portfolio committee that shareholders management bill must be fast tracked so that this bill can be introduced at least during this current financial year. Chair, I think the department will remember that we are the sixth parliament and we are working on the padlock. So that's why we want to fast track, in that we must get resources to make this work, this department work. And Chairperson, I want you to check that this component, the special appropriate bill, which was announced by the President Ramaphosa during the State of the Nation address in June, this year that the special appropriate bill will be introduced in Parliament this year. Minister Mbowen also already announced that this bill will be introduced in Parliament before the end of July 2019. I wanted to check with the department that are they ready to do that. Secondly, Chairperson, on spending of the consultant, does the department still enlist the service of the consultant? I'm asking this question because the Audit General has raised a concern in the past about the continuous utilization of the consultants by the department. Chair, I want also to know from the department that on the 7 owned companies that the department oversees, how many have permanent CEOs? You could see, Chair, that there's a lot of challenge in this department. Most of the positions that are supposed to be doesn't have permanent people. To me, it's a challenge. Most of them are acting. Chairperson, I want also to know that what are the plans of the department in doing more to create the black industrial and industries? I'm asking this question, Chair, because there is a need for a more radical approach to advise location and beneficiaries. Lastly, Chair, I want to know how does the department reach the rural community who are at the back of the beyond in terms of marketing and showcasing its services and those of the state-owned company about the opportunity that they offer. I thank you.
Thank you very much. Honorable Davis.
Thanks, Chair. Firstly, let us applaud the department and the minister for the early deliveries of the documents, so at least we had time to interrogate them. Thank you for that. My first question will be, can you share with us, department, as a committee, the non-core assets that are earmarked for disposal referred to in your documents? Yeah, we are presenting the situation whereby some of these issues, we hear them over the media. And that's what you would like to hear, I mean, to know from the department. Secondly, have all the state-owned companies under your jurisdiction signed their shareholder compacts? And are there any repercussions for those state-owned companies who fail to meet their targets? And the other question will be, can the department share with the committee what role will be played by the state-owned companies in job creation, given the financial and governance challenge they are currently facing? I think I'll stop there, Chair, because some of the questions Umamgwenya has also mentioned.
Honorable Nana.
Well, thanks, Chairperson. I want firstly to commend the minister and his team for the bold steps that they have undertaken in so far as exposing state capture is concerned. It is not going to be an easy job, Minister. It requires men and women with a spine. And some of us are not surprised when we are being called names. Only those with smaller nana skeletons in their cupboards can be worried and call you names. You can be assured of our support in this work, because we understand the extent and the damage that has been caused by capturing of our state institutions. Having said that, Minister, I would firstly want to latch on what Honorable Smith mentioned insofar as the damage that is caused by trucks on our roads. I'm sitting with a complaint from a community of Craydock in the Eastern Cape. You will know that Craydock in the Eastern Cape links Port Elizabeth and the Northern Cape. And all those heavy trucks that carry manganese to Port Elizabeth drive through Craydock. Residents are first complaining about the extent of the damage caused on their road infrastructure, but also the noise the trucks make at night. But also the noise that those trucks make at night. I mean, they run 24 hours a day, and they pass through that small town in the hundreds on a daily basis. I've seen them myself. So I would really urge the department to really consider upscaling frequency of trains that carry that manganese between Northern Cape and PE. And it will be great if that can be prioritized. That could probably get me re-elected back into parliament by that community. Now, Minister, coming to the meat of the presentation, I know you haven't gone into too much detail, but the President has more than once mentioned the unbundling of Eskom as an entity. To what extent are the unions posing a risk to this noble idea? Because quite frankly, as the DA, we think that can work. To what extent do the unions impose a risk in unbundling of Eskom? And secondly, we have mentioned that Eskom is in a debt of just over 400 billion. How an entity is allowed to raise such levels of debt, only God knows. But what really worries me are your comments that the revenue Eskom generates is unable to meet their financial obligations. Essentially, you are saying Eskom is near insolvency, if not in insolvency at all. Now, to what extent is your ministry prepared to consider private capital? I mean the model can be discussed at a later stage. I'm raising this question, Minister, because if we don't consider private capital, there is only one way to go, that the taxpayer should carry the load of bailing out Eskom now and again. And the third question, I know you have made some comments on this, particularly before elections. I saw a rather strange phenomenon before elections. All of a sudden we had load shedding. And when you came hard on it, the President came hard on it, load shedding stopped. Now I don't want to bore the committee about
the effects of load shedding insofar as our economy is concerned. I'm sure everybody knows that. And the confidence it does not bring to an investor out there. And all of a sudden, when the two of you, yourself and the president, came hard on it, it stopped. And it's something of the past. Are you in a position to share with the committee what could have caused that load shedding? And the fourth question is on page 12 of the presentation. You speak of an anti-fraud and corruption hotline that will be established in this financial year. And I accept that. But what bothers me in this financial year, you have not set yourselves some targets. And yet, the following financial year and the financial year, you've got 80% and 90%. This year, it bothers me that you don't have a target. I know it's an establishment phase, but I also do believe one has got to set some sort of target, even if it's meeting bare minimum. Do you have targets for this financial year? And if so, what are the targets?
Sorry, Chair, is that specific to the hotline?
To the hotline, yes, Minister. South African Express Airways and South African Express. You can expect a written question for written reply from me in this regard, Minister. But the question I'm asking you today doesn't really have got to do with how far have you gone with the measure, as we have announced, I think, 1 year or so ago. It really relates to the CEO's resignation. Part of what was reported in the media was that he felt or he experienced lack of political support or support. Now, I don't want to cast aspersions and doubts on anyone, but my question really is, did you guys bother to ask him what did he actually meant when he said he didn't have support, or he felt he didn't have support from either office or from the department itself? What really transpired? And I see the chairperson is getting a bit agitated.
No.
Oh, okay. I've got three more and I'll be done. Mm-hmm. Minister, in the fourth parliament, I served in this committee in the National Assembly. And one of the things we discovered was that Airlink was not necessarily a state-owned entity. And Airlink continues to use the same colors as our two airlines, SA Express and SAA. They continue to use the same platform in bookings and all of that. Now, my question is, and essentially Airlink is privately owned. And my question is, what benefit do we derive as government from this relationship with Airlink? Because from where I'm sitting, it seems to be a one-sided benefit, and it's only benefiting SA Express, South African Airlink. Midupi and Kusile, will they ever function optimally? Or should we count our losses and move on? I just want an honest, the minister smiling. I mean, Eric will tell you, I can't recall how many times in the fourth parliament did we visit those areas.
and from 1 minute we'll be told this, we'll be told that, will they ever function optimally? And the last one, denial. If anyone has no clue about the extent of the damage state capture has caused our nation, one has just got to visit denial. I mean, 8 years ago, 9 years ago, denial was doing fantastically well. Today, they can't pay salaries. Will they ever find themselves in the coming months, Minister, not able to pay salaries? Thank you. I'm sorry, I took a bit long.
Honorable Nyambi.
Thanks, Chair.
I took all the points. You must
There's no way.
No. I could see the reason why we're taking long. You wanted to take points to Honorable Nyambi Mutesa and Honorable Kluti. But you haven't taken any.
No, thanks, Chair. Let me join and comment the well-prepared presentation and getting it in time. Minister DM and DG, the first thing that I'll read so that at all times we're not going to have a problem when you come here, it's to avoid to have almost what will be a duplication. As we're doing the introduction, he said it's Nana from Eastern Cape, KZN, Gauteng, Mpumalanga. It's always at all times DG, prepare something that will have slides that will reflect the impact of the provinces that will represent here.
Yeah.
Because otherwise it will be a duplication. And drafters of the constitution will have a clear agenda about why they will have ENCOP. Like if you look at SAFCOL, what is the impact of SAFCOL in Lusikisiki? Mm-hmm. In myself coming from Mpumalanga, mm-hmm. and there's the issue of Minister land claim to some of the plantations, and what is the impact of that? Where is those areas? And if we have the slide, it will also make us, when doing constituency work, to come here and raise relevant questions instead of being more like what is happening at a portfolio committee level. So I think it's an issue that can be attended in future when you come to us, so that it is slightly different. It can be the same in terms of figures, but slightly different in terms of how you structure the presentation when coming to the select committee, so that we are on point in raising the questions. The second question that I will have besides the comment, it's the issue of the 16% vacancy rate, Minister, in the department. Instead of us coming here asking about, because from the report that you gave us in time, we went through it, it's clear that it's 16% the vacancy rate. But it will be good to have a slide that would indicate us your plan, that this is the time frame that you'll be filling the position, so that when we come getting quarterly report, we say, but you said you'll be filling this post at this time. What is happening? What are the challenges? So that we are clear in doing oversight about those issues. The third one, I like how you have structured the issue of the interventions when we're dealing with the challenges, because there are challenges and there are clear interventions. Probably if you can make us to understand what might be causing, because the past arrangement was more of appointing people that were incompetent because of a particular agenda. And now you happen to have those that were of the view that they are going to assist us, they understand the clear mandate. So it's raising questions when you have a person, people that are coming in and all of a sudden they are resigning. What might be behind that? Because they understand the challenges we are facing as a country. Those that are just leaving us whilst facing the challenge. Specifically referring to those that are coming after dealing with the challenge of those that were incompetent. The fourth one, how many of the targets in the current APP are dependent on external service providers? My
my next question would be, to what extent have the recommendations of the AG been implemented as a corrective measure within the department? Then my last question, it may be to have an update on various turnaround strategies across the different entities. But it was a very clear presentation, Minister and DM, but the issue of making sure that you always have it at the back of your mind that you are coming to people that are representing interests of province. And when I drive to Komati Port in Mpumalanga and see the challenges of maintenance of Transnet, I want to see that being reflected here so that I'm specific, and when I go back, I report to those people about what is happening, because there are issues that are affecting us directly, and we don't want to do the duplication. We want you to have a sense that when we come here, you are not wasting time, because sometimes you'll ask the very same question you have responded in the National Assembly, and it's more of a duplication. So why can't you come together with the NA and do the same arrangement? So we are more interested in what is happening in our different provinces. Thanks.
Thank you much. Honorable Mbu.
Good morning, Honorable Minister and the Deputy Minister. Let me welcome the presentation that was, and the department, the presentation that was presented, a well-prepared presentation. Minister, I just want to check with you, because you are transferring money to your entity. Do we have a tool to monitor that money that you are transferring to the entity? Did they use money accordingly? And then if not, what are you doing about that thing, if they are not using the money for what they're supposed to do? And then in the presentation for the from the minister, he spoke about the corruption in the entity and so on. What is your plan to prevent those corruption, the corrupt and the corruptees in the entities, and how long you are going to deal with that issues? And for example, you mentioned the issue of your internal audit. If your internal audit is corrupt, how are you going to handle that matter? Because your internal audit are the people that are supposed to help you, to guide you, kaloko what is happening inside the entity. But if they are corrupt, what are you going to do with them? And then the other thing is, the old plant of Eskom. Do we have any alternative if that plant is old? Do we have any alternative about how are you going to do it about it? And then the other question, I think I'm covered by some members. thanks, Honorable Chairperson. Okay, and then Minister, when he reported, he spoke about the debt of Eskom, close to 400,000 billion.
400 billion.
Yes. Well, do you have any plans how to? Okay, thanks.
Honorable, please.
Thank you, Chair. I would just like to ask the Minister, what's the anti-fraud lines number? I've got a photo here as we speak about the Mafube municipality in the Free State. Just to let you know, they bypassed the ESCO meter in the municipality. So I just wanted to phone that number. Nonetheless. just with regards to unbundling and I think Honourable Nana already spoke about that, but practically speaking, the unbundling, how do you see that unfolding within the next 3 years? Because I see the annual performance plan mentions Eskom businesses, that's generation, transmission and distribution, into separate entities. How do you see that unfolding within the next 3 years?
Are you done?
Thank you, that's it. Thank you.
I see the mic is still on. I thought you still got it. No. Thank you very much. I think I've been covered a lot by honourable members. Just a few clarity-seeking questions. There is an issue around the shareholder management. You could not share with us what were the challenges, why it was not adopted, because it indicates that it was done in the previous term, Honourable Nana, and could not be adopted. What were the challenges? So that when we get into it now, we are able to understand what were the challenges and what are the roles that we can play as the oversight committee to try and assist the minister to look into that. The other thing that we want the Honourable Minister and the DG to share with us is the expenditure in terms of the budget for the previous financial year, just on average, what were the expenditures, and what were the key challenges in terms of the, if you were not spending 100%, what were the key challenges in terms of not spending those challenges. The last one you indicated, Minister, in terms of the recovering of money lost through state capture, can we be presented? We might have time to get a plan to say how are you planning to, so that as a committee we are able to monitor and do oversight in terms of the plans in relation to the recovery of money, because I think overall, we think it's important that it's recovered back into the fiscal. But overall, Minister, I think those are the questions. I think if there were clarity-seeking questions, the DG will start and we move towards my my direction, or we want the Minister to start, because
yes,
I don't want you to...
I'll start, and I'll allocate.
Oh, okay.
So
no, fine.
So what we'll do, honourable members, is to very quickly allocate some of the questions so my colleagues can prepare, and then we'll come back to the issues that were actually raised. I'm very fortunate that our deputy minister was a provincial premier, so he can maybe reflect still on his not too distant past. And maybe address Honourable Nyambi's point about the link between national and province. Although we'll come back to maybe an interesting debate about the role of the NCOP. So it arises in the context of Limpopo, it arises in the context of Kledok in the Eastern Cape, which I'm sure he's very familiar with. On the question of the shareholder bill and so on, DG, you and your colleagues can deal with that. Spending on consultants, DG will deal with that as well. The non-core assets, I'll address it in general, but we don't have a list here at the moment, so we'll have to get that to you, Chair. How many have signed the shareholder contracts? Previously, all of them would have signed, but we can get an update from the DG and his team. Consequence management, we can come back to that. Load shedding, Ms. Makalolo will help us with that as well, and I'll address it also. the hotline target, PV, that's yours. And the DM can come in wherever he thinks he's comfortable. He's still familiarizing himself with this portfolio. And then, yeah, the link, as I said, between provinces and some of the SOCs, although that's going to be a challenge. So let me be frank. We'll have to develop it over time and get the SOCs used to the idea that they need to give us information on a provincial basis as well. In terms of the department, maybe start addressing the Smith question. But remember, when we talk about entities being captured, the department itself was also captured. And the department played, well, at the ministry level certainly, played a key role in putting in place the board, etc., etc. So when we talk about vacancy rates and so on, this is not a normal department at the moment. It's going to take us a long time to normalize, firstly. Secondly, I think half of our staff are on the support services side, whereas three quarters of our staff should be experts in each of these sectors that we're dealing with, whether it's ports or rail or aviation or energy or renewables or coal or whatever the case might be. And that's the capacity, Chair, we have to build now as part of the rebuilding. Thirdly, much of the last year or so has been about crisis management. Let me be frank, whether it's the load shedding crisis or SAA crisis or funding crisis, but it's been a roller coaster, both in terms of getting, as I pointed out in the introductory remarks, the governance processes and structures in place on the one hand, helping with the finances, with the treasury on the other hand, beginning to understand the operations of these entities and what consequences of the recent past there have been in the operational area, and what does it mean to now start repositioning. So even the shareholder book, which several of the colleagues have raised, the concept started with the Presidential Review Commission, if you remember, back in 2010, reported I think in 2012, and it's carried over from there. But if you look at the period from then till now, circumstances have changed quite significantly. So what you put in that bill, where, for example, as the President has announced, the SOC Council fits into this process, might require a bit of rethinking. So it's not just a question of writing a bill. Although some of the general areas that the Presidential Review Commission talked about, a common remuneration framework, a common governance framework, a common framework for appointment for boards and so on, some of those have already been adopted by Cabinet in the fifth administration at one stage or another. So I think that context is important for the committee to understand so that we can get the interactions right. And you have an appreciation of some of the challenges that we have as well. So over the next 6 months, our focus will be to build up the expertise in the department so that we, and we are operating in sectors that are rapidly changing, as I indicated in the National Assembly budget vote debate once I got going. And that is, if you take the aviation sector, every day there's airlines that are changing the type of aircraft they're flying. There are low-cost airlines that are looking at long-haul flights when they used to only do short-haul flights. Airlines are consolidating in one form or another because the airline business is a low-profit business. So any shift in oil prices, for example, begins to impact on jet fuel, and so the profitability gets impacted as well. The recent events with Boeing, I think as you can see over the last 48 hours, has had a massive impact on Ryanair, which is I think the leading low-cost airline in Europe. I think, I just forget the number, but I think some 3,000 or more flights had to be changed or cancelled because of the changes there. if you look at the energy sector, so as we interact with you, we'll have to look at some of these. Mm-hmm. Together with the NA committee, ideally, we will talk to you about that. Energy sector is changing very rapidly. Whether it's the impact, in our case, of gas discoveries in Mozambique, on the southern coast of South Africa, and gas is much cheaper than anything else that we have at the moment, for example. The impact of renewables, the commission, the commitments that we've made on emission control, coal power stations on one hand, Mpumalanga and now Limpopo, which is loaded with coal for the next 100 years, you could be using it on the one hand, and on the other hand, the demand that we lower emissions. And Eskom is your biggest contributor, I was going to say culprit, in that particular regard as well. So I think I can carry on, but at least let me just mention one more, which I mentioned in the National Assembly. The recent trend towards protectionism, make in America or make in wherever, the disruption of trade patterns and production patterns is beginning and will begin to impact upon the logistics business. Because in the past, components for the iPhone or smartphones in general came from 10 different countries, went to one place, got assembled. Now, if you're going to start actually manufacturing everything in one country, and 50% of your production takes place there, that logistics chain begins to change, and the value chain begins to change as well. So we're working in an environment where even the entities themselves, including ourselves, need to get on top of some of those dynamics and how they actually impact upon us. So, Honorable Swint, coming back to your point, SOCs, particularly Eskom and Transnet, have a crucial role to play in driving economic growth or being contributors. Firstly, from the point of view that Eskom is the majority energy provider in South Africa. And if you link it to Honorable Nana's question around load shedding and the report that we've had on the first quarter GDP and the impact that the energy disruptions have caused in the economy, that contributed partly to the contraction in the economy, you can see that without energy security and consistent supply of electricity, no country's economy can actually survive well. Although it's remarkable how many do as well in some instances. So Eskom is a critical player there. The second, which some of my colleagues in Cabinet have mentioned in their various budget books, is the cost of some of these services that are provided, called administered prices. Cost of electricity, cost of port charges, rail charges, and the kind of contribution that they make to the cost of business, doing business, and indeed to the cost of living as well. So that's the second major area. If we can make these entities more efficient, begin to manage their costs properly, and reduce some of the overheads that they carry, whether it is, if you take the case of Eskom, the kind of interest that they pay on their debt at the moment, and we'll introduce you to some of the numbers as we go on. In the case of Eskom, excuse me, to that extent, we can actually begin to see how administered prices can be managed better, so that, as the National Development Plan says, we can lower the cost of doing business. The third area, which over the last 7, 8, 9 years, both Transnet and Eskom played a major contribution to, is investment, fixed investment in the economy. So when the large power stations were being built, Transnet had the pipeline being built and other infrastructure, we had a total over a 2-3 year period of 900 billion rands worth of investment taking place. That number, as you'll see from the Treasury's numbers, is beginning to slow down. At the same time, the government's plan is to increase investment, both from the private sector and from the government sector as well. So investment in the appropriate areas from the larger state entities, which would include PRASA, PANREL, and others as well, from the government point of view, needs to be restored to higher levels so that they can, and then crowd in private sector money. So you, Mr. Dana, asked the question about private capital. We need to crowd in private capital as well. It happens largely on the roadside at the moment, where you have road concessions and so on. It will happen on a broader scale as well. And when you borrow money, who do you borrow money from anyway? You borrow money from our capital markets. So the private sector is a contributor in that sense. I'm just giving you a fourth example of the key role in the economy, and that is the logistics role, as I pointed out, that Transnet plays. Any lack of efficiency there then begins to impact on both big and small businesses as we go forward. So you make a valid point, and then we can explore Transnet, what are their plans in the Limpopo area. And there's no doubt that we need better connectivity from, let's call it, non-traditional areas, where there are large prospects for economic activity, so that goods can be transferred to these agri-parks, for example, packaged in some way, prepared for exports, and the efficiency of that process begins to increase so that a lot more people can participate in the economy. So I think there's a lot of thinking in that area, and we need to do more. The general point made, Chair, about rail and road has been made for many years now, but it's not happening on the right scale. So if you look at parts of Limpopo and Mpumalanga and the coal trucks that are being used at the moment, same problem. And the fact of it being expensive to repair roads is a well-known factor as well. So we accept that. And I think the SOCs need to do more to collaborate with each other and the private sector in order to get rail to become a major factor in transport. Honorable Nguyen's point about boards. The boards themselves are all inverted commas permanent, so we don't have, and the boards are paid by the entity itself, so that's the one side. You might be referring to CEOs, which is another question raised by yourself, and there the joint venture in Alexco has a CEO, as does Alexco itself. Safcol has a CEO. SA Express has a CEO on a short-term basis. But once government decides the future of the aviation sector, we can then get into place. SAA had a CEO. The gentleman resigned on his own accord. And all I want to say in that regard, and I don't want to get into any public spats in this area, is that we're not in a position, as I indicated earlier, where an entity can merely say to Treasury, give me a check for R1 billion, please, I need it tomorrow. Life doesn't operate on that basis. So whatever support we could give was given, but as some of you have pointed out, recovery of these SOCs from the problems that they've actually confronted is not an easy, smooth ride. It's a tough road, and you need tough people, as Mr. Nana was saying, in order to, both at a board and management level, cope with some of these challenges. The processes in Transnet and Eskom have started to get CEOs in place there, so that's our account on that particular issue. On the special appropriation bill, that's in the hands of the finance minister, so he'll let you know as soon as he's ready on this matter. And as he, I think he did indicate, as you said, Honorable Ingenia, that he'll do it before the end of July. It depends on a parliamentary program. Each of the entities has programs in place, and we can bring that information to you on a future occasion about the contribution towards small business creation, black industrialists, and so on. So if some of my colleagues have the information, they can talk to that as well. my colleague, the Deputy Minister, will address the question of the rural areas and how SOEs could do better in that particular regard. Ms. Bebe, non-core assets. We've given a list to the Treasury. Essentially, we are talking about either pieces of land or maybe even small businesses that might exist as subsidiaries in some of these entities that don't have value at the moment and which can be disposed of without affecting the core business of these entities. And the challenge that we've, in the current context, where you are financially constrained, it means that you have to find means other than asking Treasury for money to make the financial situation in these entities more sustainable and comfortable than they currently are. My colleagues will address the rest of the questions that you've raised. Job creation and SOEs, you have both direct jobs, if you like, and indirect jobs. So I'm afraid in many of the entities, over the last few years, you might have had a bloating of the workforce at certain levels, like number of managers that are in Eskom, the E-band level, already the current CEO who's about to depart has dealt with the upper level, where he reduced the numbers from 21 to 9, for example. So we've got to work, and this was a question raised again by Honorable Nana, the restructuring of Eskom and what would the role of unions be. So our approach is, and we've started that process in the fifth administration, which we intend to continue now, is that at our political level, at a board level, and at the management level, intense negotiations and discussions need to be held with the unions so that they become partners in this process. They understand, on the one hand, the constraints that we have. On the other hand, we have to make sure that we just don't throw people out in the streets. And there are new types of jobs that can actually be created. For example, in the renewable energy area, and similarly in other industries as well. And so we need to develop the plans for what is called a just transition as far as the workforces are concerned, which would be related to Honorable Modisa's question about what's happening to old power stations. Many of the average age of Eskom power stations is 37 years. Some of the oldest power stations, like Kumati and Krutflay, are about 50 years old. So they have to shut down at some stage. It'll become uneconomical to actually continue with them. But they have to be shut down in a way in which there are clear plans about how to deal with both the communities around those places, but also the workforce as well. But many of those power stations, if not all of them, have, and my colleague Ms. Mokololo can add to this, have these transmission parks next to them. So we need to also ask whether there are investors who will come in, put renewable, say solar plants in there, use that transmission facility to connect to the grid, and that itself will begin to create jobs in that particular environment as well. So again, if we get the right kind of collaboration with the unions, we can begin to address some of these issues in a creative but also constructive way as well. Honorable Nana, the Deputy Minister will deal with it. Maybe let me pause so that I can take a breath, and if you can deal with the cut-off and provincial issues.
Thank you, Minister. Even though I think the larger part, I think, has been dealt with, I understood Honorable Nyambi's point about the packaging of information to the select committees to suggest that we should look in our preparation of documentation so that we draw a distinction between the submission we make on the same matter to the National Assembly and the submission we make here. In this instance, Minister, we have, as per the Treasury guidelines, the format in which your annual performance plans are prepared, I think in order to create the sense of difference in terms of impact, we should look to a way in which one should conform with the guidelines in terms of treasury, and therefore the format of the APPs. We ought to look at in the packaging of the information, particularly for the select committees, a sense of repackaging that to reflect the provincial footprint of that. And I think it's a valid point. It's something perhaps as we prepare we should look to. Equally, it's probably as we do over, I mean, we oversee the entities in the reporting, that distinction ought to be made so that the feel and the impact of all of their activities and programs can, when we come here, be disaggregated to reflect the provincial aspects or dimensions of such a project. So it's a point I think we take as we come back in the other forms. We would have taken account of that. I do know that we've merely tweaked a little the submission we're making here, but largely it still reflects what we had tabled in the National Assembly. I think the Minister has covered, I just want to make a few comments. There was a question specifically to say what happened from the load shedding that was experienced and what were the interventions. I think the Minister perhaps chose to be very modest about it, didn't want to beat his own drum in that regard. But it really meant focusing on the very minutest of detail at generation, to look at each of the plants that generate, what is the state of affairs there, and to start fixing things from that, to have for each of the stations plant managers that are appointed, that are delegated enough decisions so as to ensure that the operational efficacy of each of these is maintained. So that as they contribute towards the load that is available throughout the country, there is better coordination and of monitoring of the performance of each of those. And I think it is what has helped to up the ability even to look at those that, owing to age, that would have been taken out in planned maintenance. That there is better synchronization and you can really reduce the unplanned outages in terms of plant contribution in the overall grid. So it meant very close monitoring of those, and I think we're still reaping rewards from that because there hasn't been the repeat of that, and instead there is a better uptake in that new, I think it's Medupi that brought another Mutepu tree got on stream, which sort of creates some measure of, shall I say, certainty, even though the risk is still there, but at least it is well managed in the monitoring that is taking place. The other question perhaps I would like to deal with is in respect of Denel. The Minister did say that Denel really sits in a very unique position in that whilst there have been these liquidity problems reported widely, the contrary or the conversely, it sits on the other side, with quite a potential in terms of orders that it sits with, where therefore the issue of liquidity could be addressed. We're looking towards a situation in which that entity could really significantly contribute in that sector to in the form of the supplies that it can be starting to deliver. I think the impact of it is that the defense industry really inputs a lot in the products they finally prepare out there. So Could we expect that there could be the similar problem? We have seen the private sector in the form of the banking sector making the coming into the relief there. Surely they wouldn't be doing so without a measure of comfort in the ability by the entity itself to meet its obligations. I think this is what we're working together with them to ensure that there is that assurance and sustainability going forward. The debt, how could ESCOM have been allowed this amount of debt, $400 million?
No, it was a comment.
It was a comment. Let me just try the credo issue. Again, the credo is...
He's ducking it.
Really, here, the point is about taking from road to rail a lot of the goods that are transported there.
Yeah.
With Transnet, I think we encouraging also the participation of the private sector, because there are a number of other rail lines that have been really almost not in being run. The number of possible lines that can be opened up with new operators that can take some of the load that we find in our trucks to increase the tonnage of that which goes through rail to our ports, as the case is right now. I think the question there is how, because part of the manganese coming from Northern Cape to the Eastern Cape was again the expansion of the rail line there, which is ongoing. And I think the question specifically around CREDOC, I think the appeal is for frequency to be upped in terms of the tonnaging of that on rail, so as to really offset that being on the trucks that go past there. I think it's a matter that is very specific that we need to engage specifically on it.
Yeah.
But the broad principle is again looking to other forms, the branch lines and other operators into those branch lines as part of diversifying those who use that as part of broadly the strategy of taking from road to rail. I think the case point, the other point may be talking about CREDOC, the others is the road from Devon to Johannesburg.
Mm.
Just the extent of trucks find on the road is a big problem. Maybe let me stop there for
the DD do some of his work.
Can I just comment quickly, sir? I must say, Minister, I'm impressed by the transition of my premier to DM. He seems to be an expert in this. He's speaking the right language. It's amazing.
He's a quick learner.
Yeah.
No, he's adjusting quickly.
Chairperson, I'm going to just dish out some of the questions to the colleagues here, so they can also spend their time here. The CFO will speak to the use of consultants, the shareholder performance and on issues of consequences. I'm going to ask Avril and Mahola to speak to a specific SOCs. Let me address this, the issue from Honorable BB on the involvement in employment. One of the areas that we are looking at is on enforcing, because we have the rules or legislation in place, we have designation in place, we have NIP in place. On our side, we have CSVP that we have put in place. The enforcement part has really been lacking, and we have seen it with Transnet, the 1064 project. For instance, Transnet did not contract the OEMs to deliver on local content. And that's an area that the Portfolio Committee on Trade and Industry has been putting particular attention on. We have asked references as SABS on that to go and verify local content on those projects. We're hoping to get the results soon from that particular one. So if we can enforce some of those requirements, some of those regulations that we've put in place, it should go a great deal in terms of ensuring that some of the manufacturing capacity we have in the country is utilized. So that's what we are working on our side. Honorable Nana has a question on frontline targets. I'll ask Makwebe to just answer that one. The air link and the benefits to government, Avra will speak to that. Medupian Kusile's the CAPEX program, Makholas can help us on it. On the issue of vacancy rate, the time frame for filling, if I can just say, the Minister has spoken to the filling of the digipos that has already been advertised, so that should trigger then the filling of positions going forward. Obviously, one of the areas that we have to look at is, you know, how do we reposition the department itself and what kind of skills are we able to bring in? So that work we have been doing over the last year or so to try and identify which are the areas that we need to strengthen. So do not, you know, to fill the positions on the basis of the previous structure would not have helped as much. So that is going to get quite a lot of attention going forward. And then the target on service provider, there's a couple of frameworks which we need to develop. We don't have some of those skills internally, so we will be bringing service providers for that. The SU turnaround plans, Avril and Makhola, please help us on that. Imam Medise asked about the tool for monitoring spend on transferred funds. The sector team, please help us out on that.
I'll deal with some of the other issues. So
yeah, okay.
Let's start with the allocation to your colleague.
All right. Okay. Makhola, you want to start?
I'll be quick. Just on the question on the consequence in the shareholder compact, I think in terms of Treasury Regulation 29, Minister is supposed to conclude a compact with the board on an annual basis. In our portfolio, which is Eskom, Alexco, and Safco, we've concluded the Safco and the Alexco shareholder compact. We have not been able to conclude the performance agreement with Eskom because of the delays in concluding the turnaround and the decisions that were required from government to be able to conclude that. But we are at the tail end of the negotiation process, and we expect that the compact should be signed within the current quarter. But at a high level, the compact looks at governance overhaul that we're looking at, operational performance, capital spend, and the socioeconomic entity, and the financial performance of the entity over the next 12 months. In terms of Medupi and Kusile, the member has stepped out, but there is progress. We currently have 4 units at Medupi that are commercial, 1 at Kusile, and the Imgula project itself has been completed. We have had some level of challenges in terms of the reliability and the level of performance at the new plant, but the issues have been identified, and there is a process in terms of improving the reliability of the plant over the medium term. In terms of the Eskom turnaround itself, are we executing the plan? Yes, there is a plan that requires certain actions from Eskom, which includes issues around cost saving, the coal cost that we need to look at, a manpower cost linked to that, and then looking at also the skills that we have in the business and whether they are appropriate for the transition that we want to go through. There's issues around funding from a government perspective in terms of dealing with the level of debt that we currently have. So there is a turnaround plan as we have it in the APP, and we'll be monitoring that over the next 4 quarters. I'll give it up.
So my portfolio comprises of Transnet, SAA, S-Express, and Danel. So on their shareholder compacts, we have finalized the negotiations around the Transnet shareholder compact, and it's essentially gone to the principals, so the board to consider and for the minister to consider. On SAA, Danel, and S-Express, there have been delays in finalizing the compacts because of the financial difficulties that the companies have been experiencing. So it's very difficult for them to commit to objectives if they don't know that they're going to have the liquidity that they need to deliver on those. In terms of enforcement, one of the additional things that we have put in place over and above what my colleagues have already explained is that during the course of this year, this financial year, we've already initiated the process for rolling out a remuneration framework, which creates a much closer link between performance and the remuneration of the executives. So for instance, there are a number of gatekeeper requirements that must be met before incentives can be paid. So for instance, the companies are required to achieve a large percentage of their objectives. We can set specific objectives that must be achieved. They must have a clean audit, and so on and so on. So these are the types of things that would be a prerequisite before the executives could earn any bonuses. In terms of the Airlink issue, the role that Airlink plays is very similar to SA Express, where it is a feeder airline into SAA. Mm-hmm. So it essentially brings passengers from secondary cities in the mm-hmm. country and in the region into Oar Tambo and into Cape Town, which then can get onto SAA's larger flights to fly locally, regionally, internationally. So it improves the economics and the connectivity of FAA's network. What we're seeing is that there are a number of international competitors like Ethiopian Airlines or Emirates that would be very interested in partnering with a regional airline like SA Airlink because they're not able to service the region flying out of it, like for instance Dubai, with a large wide-body aircraft. So they would like to be working with a small regional partner that has the small aircraft that are appropriate to servicing the local routes. So we are actually looking at a way that we can strengthen the relationship with Airlink, but also do it in a way where at the moment there's a lot of very destructive competition going on between SA Express and SA Express and SA Airlink. Because SAA hasn't been managing the use of the franchise, so the IP is their code, so when you book, you don't always know that you're booking on Airlink, and they haven't been managing that very well. So you've got competition happening between the state-owned airline SA Express and the largely privately owned airline SA Airlink. So that's what we're looking at in that respect, because we don't want to lose SA Airlink to one of our competitors, because that could spell real problems for SAA. I think just in terms of the turnaround plans and the corporate plans for the entities, I think I can rush through it now, but I think it's going to be much more helpful for us to have an engagement where we go through each of the plans in detail. All of them have got plans that they're busy implementing. They have had some successes. There are some areas where there are still gaps. In SAA's case, we are looking at ways to strengthen their long-term turnaround strategy and fast-track some of the benefits. A lot of the problems are also that to get some of the benefits, we need to... It does depend on having the liquidity available. On the funds that were transferred to the entities, there were two amounts. So the one was a 5 billion amount for SAA, and the second was a 1.249 billion that went to SA Express. Both of them were earmarked for repaying debt that had been guaranteed. So in SAA's case, it was one loan. It got repaid immediately when they received the money. In SA Express's case, they had a number of different loans that had to be repaid. There has been an issue where one of the conditions was not entirely clear because a portion of the funding had been allocated to cover some guaranteed leases, but it wasn't exactly guaranteed debt. And so SA Express did use a portion of the funding to meet the lease payments, and we are busy working with National Treasury to resolve it. But basically they gave us a detailed report about exactly how they had spent the money, which we have shared with National Treasury. And as I said, we're looking at whether that was exactly in compliance with the conditions that had been set. Yeah, I think that's everything from my side.
Okay, thank you. The person on consultants, the department is improving in terms of spending on consultants. The work in the department is mostly performed internally by staff. For example, the expenditure on consultants decreased from 16.9 million in 2017-18 to 6.5 million in 2018-19. However, the reason for making use of consultants over the medium term is on projects where we have shortage of skill, like in this case, on the development of the shareholder management bid and forensic investigation.
With regard to the anti-fraud and corruption hotline, it has been established in the 2018 and 19 financial year, but in each financial year we've got targets, like 2019-20, 2020-21, 2021 and 2022, which is to receive those incidents, evaluate them and forward them to the relevant law enforcement authorities. It is online. I know you've asked for the number. It's 0800-111-628 is a toll-free number. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, so, Minister.
So let me round up, Chair, quickly. On Eskom, the government has intervened to the extent, Mr. Nana, to ensure that it remains a going concern. So as you see, the special appropriation bill and any pronouncements that the Minister of Finance is going to make soon, you will see that our attempt, as the President indicated, is to ensure that Eskom remains on its feet whilst it's undergoing the changes that we are actually talking about. And on Medupi and Kusile, to add to what Ms. Makololo said, there were substantial design issues and delivery issues and all sorts of things, but I think the generation component of Eskom is beginning to get on top of how you manage with what we have and sustain that so that you get the optimal performance. It still is short of anything like 75% electricity availability factor or even 80%. When we meet you again in a month's time or two, we'll have a better sense for whether we're getting that back. In terms of the planning for the restructuring of Eskom, there is work going on within Eskom and in a joint structure that we've set up. So again, at a government level, we'll make some pronouncements on that once it's reached a point where we can say something more specific and more substantial as well. The Danelle has been covered. The AG's recommendation, so you need to end up with that one. And in respect of turnaround strategies, because many of you might be new, we have to confess that many of these entities have come up with turnaround strategies every year or every few years. That doesn't turn around. And so the turnarounds themselves are turning around. I think we're getting to a point where we need to be a lot more, firstly, clear about where do these turnaround strategies end. And I mentioned that in my introductory remarks, that for each of these entities, we need a clear vision about where we're going to take it, what is the kind of road that we have to travel, what are both the challenges but also the facilitating factors that will get us there. In some cases, it might be happening sooner. In others, it might take 3 to 5 years to actually get where we are getting. So we need to keep that short to medium term perspective in mind. But thirdly, when you look at the SOCs themselves, it's easy to get a consultant in and design a turnaround strategy. The next question is whether the SOC has the capacity to implement the turnaround strategy.
Mm.
So in many of these instances, that's why these plans sit on shelves. The capacity is not there. The skills are at a mediocre level. And you then have a credibility issue. So that's what the boards that we are putting in place need to take account of as we look into the future and see how we actually deal with these points. I think most of the issues, Chair, have been dealt with. Mr. Cloutier's point, and it's also on the restructuring stroke unbundling, so I've addressed that point as well. And then your point, Chair, on the bill, I've addressed that as well. and the expenditure challenges is, again, as I said earlier on, not a normal issue as far as we are concerned.
Yeah.
So as we normalize the department over the next year or so, then we'll get a better sense for how we're going to get things done. On the recovery of money, that's not entirely within our jurisdiction. I'm just stating an intent. But maybe in 6 months or so, we can come back to you and say whether other components of the law enforcement machinery have actually done what is actually required to do. But, you know, there are laws in South Africa that can freeze assets, that can seize assets, that can even sell assets if they think that you've stolen money and you don't want to return it, let alone being prosecuted and put behind bars. And that's probably why you're having such a significant fight back at the moment, because people don't want to wear suits and dresses. They're afraid they might end up in orange uniforms. So, just the AG point, have you covered that?
No, we haven't. We had a clean audit for the last 2 years, so we don't have any.
Okay.
So,
Chair, thank you very much for hearing us out. And then when we meet again, we'll get into some of the deeper content in respect of each of the entities. Thank you very much.
Yeah, no, thank you very much. I think on closing, I'm not going to give members opportunity to make follow-ups. We'll get time and sit with the department. In closing, Honorable Minister and Deputy Minister, we really want to thank you for availing yourself. When I first became the chair, the committee raised an issue of ministers attending, so I was a bit worried that I must not start when they are not there. They will say, but we told you, so...
Mm-hmm.
So I'll say to them,
yeah,
I'll say to them, I told you they will attend because we'll do invitations on time. That is what I said to the staff of the committee, that whenever you want to invite ministers, don't invite them 2 days, 3 days before. Let's give them 7 days so that they prepare documents they bring to us. And we really want to thank you also for bringing documents on time to us for members to be able to prepare. It's not going to be an easy road to try and clean the entities that we have. And you must know that you have got the support of the committee. We'll do our oversight role, of course. We will be planning to go to different provinces where there are entities. We'll go and do oversight in those entities and make sure that we play our oversight role. We really want to thank you. I think we are left with our own internal arrangements. We can release you, Honorable Minister. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
general policy. That is why we're creating autonomous units, creating autonomous units. Should they be able to be
Honorable members, we want to continue with our meeting as the department is leaving. We don't want to waste time. Honorable members, can we look at the consideration of the minutes? They were distributed also to honorable members. Page 1, 2, and 3. Yes. Can we look at page 1? Page 2.
Yes. Page 2, Chair. Correction of my saying that that means LS instead of LC.
LC,
Okay. Correction. Page 3. I think we are fine. Can we move for the adoption of the minutes? Honorable Mudisha.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. I move for the adoption of the minutes as reflected here.
Second.
With the
corrections?
Corrections.
Yes.
Okay.
Honorable Bibi.
Okay. Thanks, Chair. I second with the amendment.
Okay. Thank you very much. There was an announcement that the Secretary did for us to bring the copy of the IDs. I see Honorable Smith looking at me like he did not see it. It is not. We need IDs so that we deal with the official passports.
I've made an arrangement with him.
Yes. Can we all do the arrangements with the Secretary? So that all the ID copies are...
My official passport is still valid.
No, it's fine, it's fine.
If it is still valid, we are okay. We wanted to check on members whose passports are not yet valid. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much.
I'm going to announce the ticket.
Not muting. If you see her waiting.
Mr. Mapel. Hayi wayekhona mamela that day yakumbula sine problem ana ngamcheka ku ATC. Oh yeah, not fine, even there. Because we say manguruma ne internet. We say manguruma international relations, what is it? No, it's in police, it took in the Nanga Willa. CCB. I can even write on that page.
No, but I'm not sure. I will just find it.
Thank you.